So for my master's thesis, I completed a lit review that analyzed the impacts of the rising cesarean rate and really looked at evidence-based strategies for intervention. I have no relationships to disclose. So I am very much a practitioner at heart, and so when I was finding a way what I wanted to do my master's thesis on, I really wanted to find a way to apply all the research that was being done in academia and just get it out to public health practitioners. So that's who the target audience for this lit review was. It's doctors, policymakers, public health practitioners, and the it really was twofold. First, I explored the health and economic impacts of the increased cesarean section rate, and then kind of use those factors to examine what actual interventions are out there. And I focus specifically on the primary cesarean section rate because I think that's where we can make some of the most the biggest difference in actually impacting the rate. So a quick overview of presentation today. A lot of this background was already covered, and then I'm going to address why we should intervene. I often find that some people are kind of complacent with the cesarean section rate. As long as their babies are born healthy, we sometimes have to make a case for intervention. And then I'll go into exploring some of the impacts, and then look at existing strategies for intervention, go into how a couple case studies that apply those strategies, and then if time, maybe talk about some missed opportunities for intervention. So the surge in cesarean section rates, as previously discussed, has occurred in every single state, regardless of race and maternal age, and most drastically among low-risk women. So I guess we'll start with what is a healthy cesarean section rate? So according to the World Health Organization, performing C-sections only to enhance the health of a mother and her newborn should result in a national cesarean section rate that aligns with the lowest achievable maternal and perinatal morbidity and mortality. So when looking at changes in other obstetric trends in the last decade, that's the question we have to keep coming back to. Is this aligning with the lowest achievable maternal and perinatal morbidity and mortality rate? And the WHO asserts that this is achieved at around 15% of all births, a national cesarean rate of 15%. Any lower than this, and we're missing important opportunities to improve the health of mothers and children. Any higher, and we're probably performing them to the detriment of maternal and perinatal health. And as you know, so we're at about 32-33%, and there's been significant increases in that rate. Over the last 10 years, it's been increasing at an increasing rate. Really quickly, the rate is highly variable, which means that in the same hospital, you're going to find that different providers have drastically different rates. Different hospitals in the same county, different counties in the same state, et cetera, which lends to the idea that provider attitudes towards cesarean birth and vaginal birth are going to have the largest influence over cesarean rate. And so the primary force behind this increase drives from an influence outside of women themselves. And I just point this out because often you'll hear people attribute the increase in cesarean sections to maternal demand, and the literature pretty much debunks that. While there has been some increase in maternal demand for cesarean sections before the onset of labor, it is relatively minor compared to the actual increase in rate. So the decision to perform a cesarean section rate most often occurs at some point during labor. And so the rate is also a little bit paradoxical in that privately insured women are more likely to undergo a cesarean section than mothers insured by Medicaid, even though Medicaid populations have more high-risk pregnancies. So that's a little bit backwards, not really what you would expect. And we've observed these increases in all demographics. And I just wanted to make a quick note of other sort of emerging obstetric trends that have will, when we talk about interventions, have also affected the cesarean section rate. Increase in labor inductions in the last decade as well. There's some data that suggests first-time mothers who are induced are twice as likely to have a cesarean section than those who go into spontaneous labor. And there's been a large increase in late preterm births, and a huge number of those late preterm births are cesarean sections. The good news is we already have consensus in the public health field. We all know that we kind of have to address this issue. Even as early as 1980, the NIH advised that the public health field work to lower the cesarean section rate. At that time, it was 15%. This was a Healthy People objective in 2010 that we obviously didn't meet. So they readjusted it in 2020. And the WHO and the Department of Health and Human Services have all made this a priority. However, none of these institutions have put forth strategic methods to actually address this increasing rate. So that's the next part of my lit review, was to actually try and figure out what sort of evidence is out there. How can we, if a hospital wanted to reduce their cesarean section rate, how could they go about doing it? This is why I focused on primary cesarean rates, but Andrea already took care of that for me. So here's a little bit of the health impact part, and this is where I'm going to go back to the idea that the cesarean section rate needs to align with the lowest achievable maternal and perinatal morbidity and mortality. So between 1986 and 2006, as the cesarean section rate was increasing, we saw no significant change in perinatal mortality, kind of flatlined. In that same period of time, preterm births increased by 36%, low birth rate increased by 22%, and the average length of gestation decreased by 8 days. So fair enough to say, not dramatically worse, but not getting any better considering that we increased our cesarean section rate by over 50%. Maternal health didn't fare as well. Let's say in California, maternal mortality has more than doubled since 1996. And then rates of renal failure, respiratory distress, shock have all increased by more than 20%. These two statistics are not caused by cesarean section. They're just parallel trends. I just wanted to make sure we were all aware of that. So the women undergoing cesarean sections are also 2 times more likely to also experience a blood transfusion, a hysterectomy, admission to the intensive care unit, and they generally have longer stays in the hospital. Also, there's been some qualitative studies that have looked at the women's birth experience, and they have found that mothers are also less positive about their birth experiences as those compared to women who deliver vaginally. And some studies report lower breastfeeding initiation rates and shorter breastfeeding duration. This is largely because women who undergo cesarean sections need a bit more intervention because of the way you have to hold the baby. And it's not given to them as much as they need because the focus is mostly surgical in nature. So it's focused on recovery and getting the family better rather than putting the skin-to-skin contact. It's not something women who undergo cesarean sections get, but most women who undergo vaginal births will. So, and that can also affect bonding. So ideally, the cesarean section rate is associated, again, with the lowest attainable perinatal morbidity and mortality, and that's clearly not the case. I'm going to skip this part because I don't know if we have time. The economic impacts, the research on this really varies, and that is because a vaginal birth with a lot of intervention, it can be more expensive than a cesarean section. So it's not really clear. It's hard to make an economic argument for one over the other. But what we can say is that insurance structures incentivize procedures over health outcome. We don't reward physicians for doing a cesarean section when it's medically indicated versus when it's not. They do it either way, and they'll get reimbursed. Okay. So when actually looking at those studies, for studies that, or interventions that have addressed the rising cesarean section rate or morbidity associated with the rising cesarean section rate, I found there wasn't very much out there, especially if you want to focus on the primary cesarean section rate. But for what little there was, I found there was five common places for intervention. So first was to develop clear and more standardized guidelines for obstetrical interventions. Two was to limit elective induction. Three is to level payment structures that reimburse for costs of labor. Four is combat incentives that encourage providers to perform cesarean sections. And finally, this is the only one that's actually a harm reduction approach, is to make cesarean birth more mother and baby friendly and family centered. So the first case study, so now we're going to go into three case studies that kind of apply at least one in most cases more of the strategies I just listed, is Washington state legislation that was passed in 2009 that utilized state Medicaid purchasing to lower the overall cesarean section rate from 29 to 18%. So there's several components to this, but first, this kind of goes, their approach was to level provider payments for cesarean sections performed without medical indication to match that of vaginal birth. And the goal is to incentivize actually attempting vaginal birth for long enough, actually waiting till the cesarean birth is really medically indicated. The second component of this was to fiscally reward providers with low induction rates before full gestation. They did this using a pay-for-performance approach, so they financially incentivized this. And the approach is that if you wait till a mother is full term to induce, you're giving her more chance to go into spontaneous labor, thereby reducing the odds that she'll have to end up with a cesarean section. I do want to say that a caveat is that Medicaid users have a higher incidence of high-risk birth complications but a lower rate of cesarean sections, so it is likely that a larger proportion of this population who are receiving cesarean sections are getting it out of acute medical necessity. But I do think that Medicaid is a great opportunity to set a precedent in care, and that it is a good example of how public policy can be utilized to impact care, larger obstetric care culturally. The next case studies are around performance and quality measures in hospitals. These quality assurance measures are really common in most hospitals. For some reason, obstetrics has been a little slower to adopt them, but there's some these interventions that have been tested are been very effective and are really easily replicable and have been in many environments. So the first is the Hospital Corporation of America implemented a series of checklists designed to address the root causes associated with poor birth outcomes. They're mostly in Texas. And one of the most successful checklists was to help nurses monitor the administration of oxytocin. So in inducing labor, oxytocin is given to intensify contractions. And it's a very fickle drug. And if not monitored or administered properly, it can lead to a lot of issues that could lead to cesarean sections. So by simply creating a checklist that says when and how often you should administer the drug, they saw that their cesarean section decreased almost immediately. And it wasn't even the intent to discourage cesarean sections. It was just a way to standardize the way we administered obstetrical intervention, and it had a significant impact on the cesarean section rate. The other one, this is actually a fairly old one, but I found that it was cited quite often. But in the late 80s, a Chicago-based hospital system really wanted to reduce their cesarean section rate. At this time, I think it was 15%, but they or not even 15%. But so they created guidelines to help physicians determine and to standardize when is it appropriate to do a cesarean section. And so they met monthly for peer reviews to compare individual rates and group rates to that of like the larger organization, and then they could discuss cases individually. And they also, there was a second part where a physician before doing a cesarean section had to get a second doctor to sign off on it. So it was just by having this discussion, by creating some sort of awareness around when and how we're doing cesarean sections, over 2 years the rate went from 12% to 5%. That was primary cesarean section rate. So one provider or a super simple protocol can have a really powerful influence over cesarean section rates and promoting perinatal and maternal health. And these, again, are very easy to replicate and highly and really successful. So the last one I wanted to talk about was a harm reduction intervention, which is the idea of implementing skin-to-skin contact for after cesarean birth. It's pretty much been well established, the advantages of skin-to-skin contact after vaginal birth, reduces newborn crying, stimulates breastfeeding, increases newborn's temperature. But the reality is few of the 1.5 million babies born annually via cesarean section experience any of the above benefits, even though it's standard in a lot of, for vaginal birth in a lot of hospitals. And there's been several RCTs that have demonstrated that either a modified skin-to-skin contact after cesarean birth or, in some cases, the actual skin-to-skin contact still can have really positive outcomes for mother and infant. There's a couple studies that use partners, like the dad or whoever is another partner there. They'll take the baby, and if the baby's healthy enough, they'll put it on the dad's chest. And that, for the newborn, has also the same impact as putting it on the mother's chest. So there's and other programs, even just by keeping the mother and newborn in close proximity, will really impact maternal satisfaction with the birth experience. So it is very possible to do this, and if anybody's interested in getting that implemented, it would be great to see that happening in hospitals in the country. And then very quickly, a couple missed opportunities for intervention. I didn't find many, much evidence around providing low-risk pregnant women with better alternative delivery options, like centering pregnancy. There's a lot of data that suggests the few birthing centers that are out there, the few great midwifery programs, have a much lower cesarean section rate than that of hospitals, and they're also a lot cheaper. They save a lot of money. So finding ways to expand those alternative delivery options is really important. And the second is to empower women. I think a lot of women don't really know when they are going in for an induction that their odds are that much higher for having a cesarean section. And so we have to give women the information they need to make informed decisions about the birth process. And a lot of this information is out there between March of Dimes, childbirth connections, but they just don't have any vehicles to really disseminate that information properly. And then finally, to expand the field of midwifery and promote its use by, well, there's a couple of suggestions there. I'm almost out of time, so. We really need to strike a balance between what is medically necessary and what is medically done in excess. And I strongly encourage you to disseminate this information to any colleagues working on this. That was the point in doing this, is to really empower us as public health professionals to say we do need to address this issue, and we really do have tools at our disposal, and to emphasize that public health can play a unique and central role in addressing this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.